Last week we tried to define what precisely constitutes basar in halacha. So we said this week we can try to define what constitutes a chalav. So it comes in the Gemara Maseches Chulin, the 8th parak, and tells us that hamavashal b'mei chalav potter, that if a person cooks meat together with mei chalav, so mei chalav, we're going to translate at least for now to be the whey. So just a little bit of a background, those who remember from what was her name, Little Miss Muffet. So if you take milk and you have it sit, so it's going to separate into the curds and whey. If you try to do it without milk today, it's not really going to work too well. Milk is pasteurized, homogenized. So it's going to take a long, long time for that to happen. But if you take an old style cup of milk and you let it sit for a little bit of time, so it's going to separate into the solid part, which are the curds, which can eventually be turned into cheese. And then it's going to, the whey is going to separate. So that whey, that liquidy part of the milk, so that's what the Gemara calls mechalav. And the Gemara says, mevashal mechalav is potter. So it would seem from the Gemara that at least on the level of the Araisa, that the mechalav itself is not really considered to be chalav. Tosfos points out in Maseches Chulin that this does not mean to say that mechalav is lemaisa, not considered to be milchik. There are Gemaras that speak about kusach, one of the classic milchik dishes in the days of Chazal, was a kusach, it was a rabbi from Maseches Pesachim, a kusach abavli. But the Gemara describes that some of the ingredients that went into the making of this kusach were a combination of some mechalav to go combined with salt, combined with bread. That's why, in fact, it's chametz stick in the third pack of Pesachim. So Taisa says that the Gemara always uses a kusach that, as an example of a milchik food. So and one of the ingredients that made the kusach supposedly milchik was mechalav. So you see from there clear that even though mechalav maybe on a level of derais is not considered to be chalav, but midrabanan for sure it's considered to be chalav. That tells us there's an ara in Maseches Chulin. So the Rosh in Maseches Chulin has another chiddush concerning this mechalav, where the Rosh says that perhaps we define incorrectly what mechalav is. The Rosh says that perhaps mechalav doesn't mean what we colloquially call whey, in the sense of you take a cup of milk and now it separates into its two different parts, so the mechalav, the liquidy part, is considered to be not chalav. So says the Rosh, no, maybe what Chazal meant is as follows, that first if you take a cup of milk and you put it out and it sits for a couple of hours and it separates into curds and whey, and then you go ahead and take this whey and you recook it over again, heat it up over again to further extract some of the solid part. There's even within the whey there may be a little bit of potential curds. So comes the Rosh and says that's what's called the mei mechalav, the whey. It means once it's already been recooked and you've gotten every last drop of solid out of this mechalav, so then whatever junk is left, whatever liquidy stuff is left, that's considered to be not chalav on the level of deraisa. And maybe that's considered to be not chalav even on the level of derabanan. You can't tell, there is no gemara. The one gemara that tells us proves that mechalav is at least milchik mederabanan. So once the Rosh has redefined for us mechalav by saying that maybe there are two different types of mechalav. There's mechalav, there's mei mechalav. So maybe the gemara about kusach, which speaks about milchik dish, so maybe that gemara is talking about regular way, whereas the Rosh and the gemara Maseches Chulin, which says that the mechalav is not really milchik, maybe that's talking about the way, that's talking about the mei mechalav. So they can't tell according to the Rosh what's the din going to be. But according to them, there was mechalikas on a level of derais, but he tells them the Rosh, what was this mechalav? The Vash of mechalav, everyone agrees is potim, and a Torah doesn't constitute chalav. So what was it? According to Tosfos, it's just regular plain old way. Regular way min haTorah is not considered to be chalav, whereas according to the Rosh, so regular way would be chalav min haTorah. The only thing that's chalav, either midrabban or not chalav at all, is once the way has already been retreated, it's already been reboiled over, and there's mamish, nothing left to it, no solid left to it, then and only then is it considered to be mechalav, to be potter. This machlekes Tosfos in the Rosh, and that how to define mechalav, this becomes important concerning another machlekes. In order to get to the other machlekes, we need just a little bit of a background. We touched on this part of the sugya a little bit. I don't remember, I think it was last year when I gave a shiur here with the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. We spoke a little bit about Evim and Achai. So we touched a little bit on the sugya Maseches Becharis, which is going to shed some light on this machlekes in the Rosh. The Gemara Maseches Becharis has a very strange question. The Gemara says, how can one ever drink milk? Forget about Bos B'chalav. How can one drink milk? Stop. Shouldn't all milk be treif? Why should all milk be treif? So the Gemara has two possibilities. And one possibility, the Gemara says, is that maybe all chalav is considered to be like dam and halacha. Why in the world? What's the connection between dam and chalav? So the Gemara quotes a machlekes atanoim that appeared in Maseches Nida. There was a machlekes atanoim about the following phenomena. Chazal observed, obviously, that when a woman is nursing, so generally speaking, she doesn't get her period. So what's the correlation between those two statements? Why is that? That when a woman starts nursing, so all of a sudden she doesn't get her period, and then you usually give a take. So when she stops nursing, so the period comes back again. So one of the Tanoim made the following observation. Again, it's very hard for us to understand biologically what the statement means, but the Gemara says that dam nekar v'nase cholov, that somehow the dam stops, the dam ends, and the dam somehow transforms into cholov. I'll defer to the doctors on what exactly that's supposed to mean. So So dam nekav in asa chalav. That was one opinion in Tanoim. So comes the Gemara Maseches Bechoros and says, if that's true, that dam nekav in asa chalav, that somehow there's a connection between the dam in the body and the chalav in the body. So then when a person drinks milk, you drink milk from a cow. So basically what you're drinking is something which at one time was dam. So maybe that should be an issa d'araisa of eating dam. That's the Gemara's Havamina, that we should ask to roll milk because of dam nekav in asa chalav. So in fact, that statement of the Gemara is very fascinating. Even though we happen to paskin that ain dam nekav in asa chalav, we paskin that there is no correlation between those two statements. We paskin that hilchos nid is not an indication of anything concerning the biology of dam nekav in asa chalav. So comes the Acharonim and say, wait a second, that's a big chiddush that the Gemara said that we should ask that all milk because of the issur of dam. That's questionable, which in terms of general kashrus issue. If you look at the cholov, so the cholov is clearly different. Everybody agrees that even if you hold the dam nekav nas, the cholov, it's changed. Some of there's chemical changes, there's biological changes, not the same chepzer. And still the Gemara thought that dam nekav nas, the cholov, we should ask all milk in the world because it has its roots in dam. So that sheds some light on a general question about how do you view what's called the issa shenishtana. If you have treif of food and the treif of food has been transformed and it turns into something else and you apply so many different chemical processes and now it's so different from that piece of chaza that you started out with, so is that really still considered to be treif? At what point do we say that an issa shenishtana is totally mutter? The whole issa is paka. So some of the achronim wanted to be medayek from this Gemara, but you see that even though there's quite a few changes that have gone along the way, according to that understanding of dam nekav nasa cholav, the cholam looks different, smells different, tastes different. It's very, very different from the dam. And Afa Pichain, the Gemara wanted to ask her because of dam nekav and asa cholav. So that happened in the Gemara would potentially be a very serious chumrah this man has it. There is another ha'orah that the Chazon Ish makes, we'll come back to a little bit later. The Chazon Ish says that how could it be that Chazal wanted to ask her all cholam in the world because it has its roots in dam? Don't we have a Mishnah in Masechus Nida, but the Mishnah says that there were chamesh maris dam in matanei beisha. That if a woman has a re'iyas dam, so she doesn't become a surah necessarily. She only becomes a surah if the dam meets the halachic criteria of dam. And one of the basic conditions to be labeled as dam in halacha is that it has to have a mara adam. It has to be red. So the Mishnah says there was a special halacha l'moshe m'sinai. There were certain shades of red, and not all red is considered to be a problem. This marazeh, Rishonim write based on the sugya in the end of the second paragraph, that we don't rely on these chilukim anymore. It's hard for us to discern within the red family. This marazeh, when we look at damim, so the only thing we're looking for, is it red or is it not red? But imtim salama, that it has any drop of red to it, so then we assume automatically that it's also. But me'ikra adim in a Torah, that's not true. Me'ikra adim in a Torah, even if it is in the red family, it may still be motiv. It doesn't meet the official criteria of one of those shades of halachic red. So the Chazon Ish makes a ari. You see that dam by definition means it has to be red. So here you have cholav. So even if in Saloma the dam nekav nasa cholav, it's not red, it's white. So even if it's biologically quote unquote dam, even if that's true, dam nekav nasa cholav, it should still be mutter because al pidin it's not red. So comes the Chazon Ish and says, what do you see from here? That this chiddush haTorah of chamisha maris dam and that chiddush haTorah. Which the Gemara Sanhedrin says means ben dam tami l'dam tohar, that there's a principle that something can be biologically blood and still be mutter. That's only a chiddush hilchos nida. That's a special zayas across of b'mkara damea. Special zayas across that some dam are mutter and some dam are rasa. But in terms of other areas of halach of dam, so there's no distinction whether something is red or white. If it's biologically dam, whatever the definition of biological dam is, if you accept the opinion of dam nekav nasa cholav, so then the dam is also and the cholav is also rasa. Also, even though it happens not to be red. So this Hava, meaning the Gemara, is very important. The Gemara wanted to ask all milk in the world based on dam nekav nasa cholav. But at the end, the Gemara says, we don't really pass it like this. We pass it that dam ain dam nekav nasa cholav. So the Gemara says, no, even though we deny dam nekav nasa cholav, we can still ask all milk in the world based on a different svara. Based on yotzim in ha'asa. The Mishnah says in Masechus Bechoros, that if you have a treif animal, so any milk that comes out of a treif animal is treif, or any eggs that come out of a treif bird are considered to be treif. So every animal, when it's alive, is considered to be treif, because it's eva minachai, it's basa minachai. You're not allowed to eat a live animal. So just as you're not allowed to eat a live cow, so you shouldn't be able to drink the milk that comes out of the live cow, based on the principle of yotzim and asar. So the Gemara has two different havaminas to asar raw milk, either based on dam nekav and asar cholav, or based on yotzim and asar. So the Gemara says, so Taka, why is it only Havamina? Why is it not true? Why is it that milk is in fact mutter? So the Gemara says, at the end of the day, the Gemara says, no, it's not Taka, not true, that milk is really mutter. Why is that? Especially because there is a kosov. Because the Torah says, Eretz avas chalav u'dvash. that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us we're going to come to Eretz Yisrael and we're going to have a wonderful land of flowing milk and honey. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to tell us, we're coming to a place where everything's treif, the chalav is treif, you're not going to be able to drink the milk. That's a very, very shvach avtocha. So it must be from the fact that the Rebbe Shlom describes Eretz Yisrael as being a zavat chalav advash. It's a special gzeres hakosov that chalav is mutter. Notwithstanding all the reasons it should have been also. We should have asked it twofold. We should have asked it al dam, we should have asked it al tzeva minachai. But l'maisi you can't go against what the Chumash itself says. So it's a gzeres hakosov that chalav is mutter. So now comes the rush in Maseches Chulin and quotes a major machlokes that he had in one of the early Rishonim with the Rabbeinu Eliezer, how to understand this Gzeres HaKosov of Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. So comes the Rosh and says that one of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Eliezer, made the following ha'ara. Since the Gemara really stuck to its guns that all milk in the world should have been treif, that's the Havamina, that's what the din should have been. Lulei the Gzeres HaKosov, special matter, special Chiddush HaTorah that Chalav is mutter. So comes Rabbeinu Eliezer and says, only those things, only that liquid that a pidin is considered to be chalav was included in that gzeres hakosov of eretz avas chalav udvash. But whatever doesn't have a shame chalav was never included in that heter, and the mela, the original havamina, is in fact intact. So comes Rabbeinu Eliezer, makes a simple cheshbon. He puts together the Gemara in the first parak of Becharis and the Gemara in the eighth parak of Chulin, and he walks away with the following conclusion that mei chalav is, forget about whether it's milchak or not, it's treif. That all of whey is considered to be treif, according to Rabbeinu Eliezer. Why? Because if the Gemara learns out from Gzeres HaKosov Chalav Imo that mech chalav whey is not considered to be chalav, so if it's not considered to be chalav, there's no isur basu b'chalav on it. Well, guess what? If there's no isur basu b'chalav on it, because it doesn't have a shem chalav, so then it's not called Eretz Zavas Chalav Advash as well. The Torah promised us chalav, the Torah did not mean whey. So since chalav, mech chalav was never included in the Gzeres HaKosov Zavas Chalav Advash, it remains the isuro, and there's an isur b'araisa to eat all mecholov based on either yotze min ha'asur or based on dam. Very simple. So we thought we're coming up with a kula today. We thought we're going to come up that all the whey, everything is all the entomans, everything's parva. Forget according to Rabbeinu Eliezer, everything's treif because whey mecholov according to Rabbeinu Eliezer is mamish treif. So this chiddush of Rabbeinu Eliezer obviously has to be taking a stand. He must be taking a stand on the machlokes tells him the rush that we mentioned before about how precisely we define mecholov. Because let's not forget, the Gemara speaks about eating a kusach, and one of the ingredients in kusach was mechalav. Chazal ate mechalav, there's no question about that. So how in the world could Rabbeinu Eliezer say that mechalav is treif? So the answer is that Rabbeinu Eliezer must have held like the Rosh, that we misdefine, we define incorrectly what constitutes mechalav. It comes Rabbeinu Eliezer and says that what we call whey, we just have mechalav, that was never what the Gemara meant. When it said, Lo Savash, Vi B'chalav, Vimo Prat, L'mei Chalav, that's considered to be Chalav Gomor, so therefore it's kosher. But the Mei Mei Chalav, that which the Rosh thought, that the correct definition of Mei Chalav means, the Wei Wei means the Mei Mei Chalav, something which is already so watered down to the point that there's not much, nothing left to it. So again, that's what the Gemara meant, was excluded from the din of Basu B'chalav. It comes with Ben Eliezer and says, just as it was excluded from the din of Basu B'chalav, it was excluded from the heter to eat it altogether. So it comes out, according to Ben Eliezer, that there are really three different levels. That there's real bona fide chalav, real mekoyz, that's mamash chalav, that's chalav deraisa. Then the middle ground, the middle position, which is mei chalav, just a cup of milk that was separated, occurs from the whey, and you didn't do any further process to it. So that's also considered to be chalav deraisa. That's chalav deraisa, and therefore it's bas b'chalav deraisa, and therefore it's mutter to eat. But if you have mei mei chalav, if you have something which was so watered down that all is left is just the liquidy part of the milk, and there's no solid kiuzet to it, so comes Rabbeinu Eliezer and says, that's not bas b'chalav, but not kosher either. So that's the way Rabbeinu Eliezer understands the sugyas. So the Rosh disagrees with Rabbeinu Eliezer, and he says that Rabbeinu Eliezer misunderstood the halacha of basar b'chalav. Why is it that lo savashas bi b'chalavimo? Why is it that we exclude mechalav? How did Chazal figure out that it's not considered to be chalav? So the Rosh says the stomach Chazal had the following understanding that the Torah says lo savashas bi b'chalavimo. It means milk is only asur the way it is when it comes out of the mother. When it comes out of the mother, so it's considered to be the curds and the whey all rolled into one, and the curds, the solid part, is the eker part of the milk. Once it starts to separate, once it's considered to be distinct and separate Once it's no longer similar to the way it came out of the mother, so that's a gezeres akasa that's not called chalav imo anymore. It doesn't say that's not called chalav. Whereas according to Rabbi Eliezer, mei chalav al pidin is not called chalav. So then he went to extrapolate to the zaras chalav advash and say, well, it's not called chalav hilchas bas b'chalav, so it's not called chalav and hilchas eretz avas chalav advash. And he came up with a chumrah that it could potentially betray. So the Rush says nothing doing. The Rush says that's not what the Chumash is telling us. It's not that it's a hafkah from the shame chalav. It's a gzeres akos, it's not called chalav ha'em. It's not called chalav imo. In order to be bas b'chalav, so it's not sufficient that it just has a shame chalav. It has to be a chalav ha'em. It has to be chalav imo. So the Rush says, therefore, you have no right to compare the din of chalav, the definition of chalav in hilchos bas b'chalav, to the definition of chalav in hilchos kashrus. So comes the Rush and says, I'll prove to you that I'm correct, that this is only a gzeres akosov in hilchos bas b'chalav, and it doesn't affect the shame chalav and kalat harakula. What's the barometer, what's the litmus test to prove whether this is true? So the Rush says, let's look for other dinim of chalav in the Chumash. Where else does the Torah speak about dinim of chalav? So there is a din of hechsher, there's a halacha, that in order for a solid food to become tamei, so it has to come into contact with a liquid, one of the official mashkin, one of the mashkin that it has to come into contact with is chalav. So if you have an apple, the apple gets wet, falls into a cup of milk, so the apple can potentially become tamei if a davar tamei touches it. So what's that halacha? Is mei chalav considered to be a mashke or not? So the Gemara learns after a pasuk that chalav is called a mashke. Is mei chalav machshir or not? If an apple touches a liquid whey, will it become susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah? So l'chora, that would be the litmus test whether who is correct. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the mei chalav doesn't have a shem chalav. It's mamish nothing. It's not a mashke in halacha, zero. So then it shouldn't be machshir. Whereas according to the Rush, that it has a shem chalav, so l'chora it should be machshir. So what's the answer? The answer is the Farish Gemara. The Gemara is the Farish, like the Rush. That's the Rush's Raya, that Mei Cholav is Machshir. So you see from here that just as in Uchas Tumah V'Tara, Mei Cholav has a shame Cholav to it. So too, in Uchas Eretz Avas Cholav Udvash has a shame Cholav to it. So therefore, all Cholav should be Mutar. And the only reason why it's excluded from Basel B'Cholav is a special Gzeres HaKosav, a special form that's not considered to be Cholav Ha'em. So I call bottom getting back to Chizbasa b'chalav. So there is a basic din that mei chalav is different. Mei chalav is not considered to be chalav deraisa. We have a machlekes that we show them how precisely to define it. Does it mean way? Does it mean the way? Mei chalav or mei chalav? And then we have a machlekes to Rush and Ben Eliezer conceptually. What's the nature of this gzeres hakosav? Is mei chalav not considered to have a shame chalav altogether, or is mei chalav just a special gzeres hakosav within Chizbasa b'chalav? Some of the things that we've been mentioning happen to have relevance in a shayla that comes up, nothing to do with Hilchos Bas B'chalav, happens to be a shayla on Hilchos Shabbos, but some of the klalim, just for thing, I digress for a moment, some of the klalim that we've been talking about are going to potentially affect a very fascinating shayla on Hilchos Shabbos. We know that there's a very serious shayla of drawing blood on Shabbos. To draw blood on Shabbos is, we assume halacha is an issa d'araisa. Machlokes is a rishonim what the issa is, but it's usually assumed, most of the rishonim probably assume like Rabbeinu Tam, it's an issa of netilas neshama, because the Torah says that shochet is one of the lamates malachos, netilas neshama. So Rabbeinu Tam says, ki adam hua nefesh, when you take dam out of somebody, so netilas dam is considered to be like a mixas netilas nefesh. So the Torah was also mechayev, it's an issa d'araisa of chovel, as a part of the malacha of shochet, as part of the malacha of netilas neshama. So there's a question that was raised. If argument's sake, blood has to be drawn, assuming that it's not an issue of pikuach nefesh, what if blood has to be drawn on Shabbos? And the reason why they want to draw the blood is they want to test not the red part of the blood, they want to test other parts of the blood, the plasma of the blood, or the white blood. I'm not going to say anything too. I have a cloud girl, I have a mesora, that when you speak in front of doctors, you have to be careful not to say anything that sounds foolish. So I'll just say very, very cloud. So they want to do testing on that part of the blood, which is not officially the quote-unquote the red part of the blood. So what's the halacha? So there was some poskim wanting to be matir to draw such blood on Shabbos. Why? Because the drawing of the blood is also because of the tilas adam, ki adam hu nefesh. And dam, we know, is considered to be only when it's red. That's the Mishnah quoted before from the second breath of Masechet Nida. So only the red part of the blood is considered to be the blood. So when I draw the blood, it's going to be very hard to try to extract just the red blood cells themselves. So we draw out all the blood. But the only part of the blood that I really want is not the red part. So the red part is the Malach Shein Tzrich Lagufa. Malach Shein Tzrich Lagufa is only Nisa Derabanan. So sometimes the Malach Shein Tzrich Lagufa, Nisa Derabanan, sometimes going to be mutter even for a Chol Hashem B'Sakan under certain circumstances. So maybe one could argue that to draw blood, if I want the red blood cells, so that's Petilas Adam with Tzorech Adam. But if I don't want the red blood cells, I want the white blood cells, I want the plasma, I'm not interested in the red part. So that's a malacha shena tzricha lagufa, and maybe we can knock it down to a derabanan, and then there may be certain grounds to be makel in certain circumstances. So that chiddush that some poskim wanted to suggest is hardly questionable on two counts. First of all, based on what the Chazon Ish proved from the Gemara Maseches Bechoros, that din that we distinguish between red and white and colors of dam, so that's only a special gezeirah sakas v'nuchas nida. That has no relevance outside of Hilchos Nida. Haraya and Hilchos Kashrus, it wasn't relevant. Just as it's not relevant in Hilchos Kashrus, it's not going to be relevant in Hilchos Shabbos either. When the Torah says, ki hadamu b'nefesh shechaper, that mokor, that dam is considered to be like an atilus neshama, so that's talking about, not Hilchos Nida dikadam, that's talking about the kolot harakula definition of dam. So even the white part of the dam is considered to be dam, lav dafka the red part. But l'charin, even a stronger question against these acharonim is based on the following ha'ara. The Badia Shulchan makes the following very simple ha'ara in Hilchos Basa B'cholav as follows. That no matter how you slice it, whether you hold like Tosfos, like the Rosh, or Ben Eliezer, everybody agrees that there is a din that mei cholav is not really milchik. So at least on the level of deraisa, part of the milk is not really milchik. So it comes about, the Shulchan says, what's the din in the following case? Let's say I have cooking a pot of chola, and a little bit of milk falls in. So we know the halacha is, I have to make a shir cheshbin. Is it batal b'shishim, not batal b'shishim? And the din is that if I'm not sure whether it's batal b'shishim or not, then it's going to be also, because suffering deraisa l'chumra, because I need shishim to ascertain that there's no time of the cholav shabo. So it comes about the Shulchan and makes the following calculation. How come nobody ever said the following kula? When a cup of milk falls into my pot of cholla, so I should ask myself, well, how much of this milk is curds and how much of this milk is whey? And the part that's whey, so midaraisa, we shouldn't be concerned with. We should only require shishim corresponding to the curd part of the milk. Lo shemano davazemei olam. So why is it lo shemano davazemei olam? So the chori you have to say as follows. When do we say this exerts a kosel that a mevashel mechol of potter? That's only once the mecholav is separated from the cholav. So then you can argue there's a chiddush Torah that the curds lechud and the whey lechud. But kol zman that it's betarovis, kol zman that it's one unit, one entity. So the Torah wasn't given for to the science in the sense that when you look at a cup of milk, so the halacha doesn't say that what you're looking at is part curds and part whey, and the whey is mecholav and it's part the minatorah. There's no such thing. Kol zman that it's the chefetz achas. That's considered to be a chefetz of cholav. It only takes on the unique characteristics of halacha of mecholav once it's separated. So minat Torah, you have to be mishayer, even corresponding to the whey. So too, the Acharonim write that this cheshbin that some poskim wanted to be makil to draw the blood, they say that, well, I don't want the red part, I just want the white part. You can't say that. I mean, it's only, even if the Chazon Ish is not right, even if it's lomar that the distinction between red and white exists even out of the realm of Hilchos Nida, but that it's only true once it's separated one from another. But when you're looking at it, when you have blood in a test tube, I'm drawing out the blood, so you can't say that, no, I only want half of the blood, I don't want the other half of the blood. It's blood, it's all one cheft of blood. The same way it's considered to be one chefza of milk. So this discussion that we're having in terms of mechalav on two counts is going to discredit that chiddush that some poskim wanted to say. Based on the Chazon Ish, that psach was incorrect, and based on the Badia Shulchan's Arab and mechalav, that psach was incorrect as well. The Gemara then goes on to speak in the Maseches Chulin about other types of milk, which al pidin is not really considered to be milk. So the Gemara speaks about hamavasha b'cholav zochar, that if you have a male animal, the simple pshat the Gemara is, if a male animal produces a little bit of milk in an abnormal fashion, so the Gemara says that's also not really considered to be cholav in halacha. Mavasha b'cholav potter. So the Ramah seems to say that din, that mavasha b'cholav potter, so potter here doesn't mean potter of al-asa. Potter means that it's a mamish mutter, that if you can get a male animal to produce milk, so that milk that comes out is dal miyoch, it's not considered to be milk at all. So the shach has difficulty with that psach of the Ramah. How can you say that it's mamish mutter? Usually the phrase potter means mutter min ha-Torah, but it's also mid rabbanon. And it also says the shach, the Gemara says in the same breath, and mevashel b'meichal of potter, and mevashel b'chal of zochar potter. When it comes to meichal of, so the Rishonim write that it is a problem with the Rabbanon. Tosfos had a raya from Kusach that it is a problem. So how could the Ramah say that Mavasha b'cholav zocher is mamish nothing? So the Shach tries very difficult to reread the Ramah, that the Ramah didn't really mean what he said. But the Pasha Pshat is that the Ramah really meant that it's mutter. So what's the Pshat in the Ramah? So the Bir HaGra writes that the source for this Ramah, the lumbus of this Ramah, is really based on the concept that we were speaking about before. That when it comes to Nei Cholav, so Mei Cholav, the Rosh said, really does have a shame Cholav. It is considered to be Cholav, Elawat. It's considered to be cholov, but it's a special gzeres hakazov that it's not included in basim b'cholov because it's not considered to be cholov ha'aim. So comes the Biagra and says that's true when it comes to mecholov. The Rosh's Lomtus is correct in mecholov. When it comes to cholov zachar doesn't have a shem cholov altogether. So since cholov zachar is b'chlam mufka from the shem cholov, so it's fundamentally different from mecholov. So mecholov has a shem cholov. It's just the gzeres hakazov and ruchos basim b'cholov. So therefore, mid the rabbanon they made a gezerah because lamais that's called milk. Lashon Torah is considered to be milk. Elawad, it's a special ptua, a special prod, and milchus bas b'chalav that it's excluded. So b'chiyah gavna, since it has a shem chalav in halacha, mid the rabbanon it's considered to be a problem of bas b'chalav. In contrast, the chalav zachar, which doesn't have a shem chalav altogether, so it doesn't have a shem chalav altogether, the chum never instituted even in this at the rabbanon. How in the world did the Gra know that chalav zachar doesn't have a shem chalav altogether? The Gra says, let's go back to the barometer of the Rosh. How did the Rosh know whether something has a Shem Chalav or doesn't have a Shem Chalav? How did he know whether it's a Din of Kala Terakula, whether it's a Din Prati and Basa B'Chalav? So the example, the halacha that proved one way or the other was, is it Machshir or not? If an apple falls into a liquid, is that considered to be Hechshir Ayde Chalav or not? So when it comes to Mechalav, the Gemara says, Beferish Mechalav is Machshir. When it comes to Chalav Zachar, so the Mishnah says the Chalav Zachar is not Machshir. So the Gra dug up a Mishnah and the Sefer Machshirin to prove this Dinim Hichos Bas B'Chav. So you have to know Kol Tarkula. That you have to read all the Be'er Gras. So comes the Gra and says, who happened to have known Kol Tarkula? So comes the Gra and says that in Hilchos, Mechalav, that's not a Hafkah from the Shem Chalav. That's a Chert of Chalav with a Ptor in Bas B'Chav. So the Me'el in Issa the Rabbani kicks in. Masha Enkein, Chalav Zachar, which doesn't have a shem chalav in kala tarakula, harai, it's not machshir. So therefore, even mid the rabbanon, it's not considered to be a problem of basa b'chalav. So there's only one little technical problem with the shita sagra, with the gra's understanding of the Ramah. If this is correct, that the chalav zachar doesn't have a shem chalav, so now we're back to the original kasha, so it should be treif. Because remember, Ben Eliezer's cheshbin is that all milk should have been asur because of a dam neck of nasa chalav, because of the yotzim and asur. And the only reason why it's mutar is because of a special quirk, a special gzeres of kasav, is the vas chalav udvash. So whatever's not, doesn't have a shem chalav on it, so it should remain be isuro. So there's no gzeres of kasav on chalav zachar. So the Gron, the Ramon, the Shach are fighting it out whether chalav zachar is milchix or not. Forget about it being milchix, it's mamish treif. So this ha'ara is asked by one of the acharonim. There's a sefer called the Issa v'Heter. It's called the Issa v'Heter Ha'arach. Hopefully we'll be referring to it many times during the Din of Bas B'Chalav and Taroves. So the Issa v'Heter Ha'arach is a fascinating sefer. It was written by a Talmud of the Tumas Hadeshin. It's only about this big, and it's called the Aruch. And I can't imagine what the kasher is exactly. But in the Issa v'Heter Ha'arach, so there are some notes on the bottom also, written by somebody later. So in the ha'aras of the Issa v'Heter Ha'arach, so he has this kasha, he has this ha'ara. He says, according to this, the whole shtickle Torah, so then chalav zachar should mamish be treif. So he says, l'chor, the answer to this question, you have to dig up another Torah to that kasha of why is it that milk is mutar. So the Shach happens to write, not a milk is bas b'chol, but earlier on in Yeridaya, the Shach says, in the Chilas Kavod, the Rabbeinu Eliezer and the Rosh, he thinks that there's another pshat in the Gemara Maseches B'chor. The Gemara Havamina, that milk should be treif, because it's yotzim in an asur, and exerts a kasha that it's mutar. So whereas both the Rosh and Rabbi Eliezer understood that the nature of the Gzeres HaKosov is that Cholav is Mutar. So Hashem Cholav is Mutar. And now they were just finding it out, the details. What's called Cholav, what's not called Cholav. The Shach says that's not the Pshat in the Gemara. The Maskanas of Gemara is that since we have the Gzeres HaKosov of Zavas Cholav Udvash, so we have to re-examine what the Havah meaning was to begin with. Turns out that we misunderstood the entire Adin, says the Shach, that the Havah meaning was that there's an Isser of Yotzim and Achai, Kamash Malon, the Pasuk of Zavas Chalav Udvash, that there's no such thing as an Isser Yotze Min HaChai. Yotze Min HaTomei is Tomei, Yotze Min HaTreifa is Treifa, but Yotze Min HaChai was never asked by the Torah altogether. So if the Gzeres HaKosov of Zavas Chalav Udvash doesn't mean that it has to have a Shem Cholav L'maskana in order to be Mutar, the Gzeres HaKosov is that original Issa that we thought exists doesn't exist altogether. There is no such Issa, there's no such Issa on the books. Once, in one fell swoop, you take that Isra of Yotzim El Chai and Mamish throw it out the window, so then you can't ask any Merkasha. So then Cholav Zachar is Mutar. It's not called Cholav. Who cares? Big deal. It's not called Cholav. It's still going to be Mutar. So Kol Panim, the Halacha, the way the Ramon, the Bir HaGra presenting it, is that Chmei Cholav is a problem in the Rabbanan because it has a Shem Cholav. But Cholav Zachar doesn't have a Shem Cholav altogether, and therefore it's going to be totally Mutar.
Can you say there's no
No, but the problem is that we're working with the second beer because we pass the mikvah in the ein dam nechem nazachal. So the reason that concerns us more is the yeltsin minachai problem. There is a third type of physical chalav which the Gemara also excludes from the dinner of basa b'chalav, and that's chalav shchuta. Any milk that comes out of the animal after the animal is no longer alive, that's also not considered to be basa b'chalav. Here, the Mishnah and the Gemara speak specifically about an issa d'rabban. Hopefully, we'll get to it. We'll get down the line to the dinim of kichal, the unique halachos of the milk shecht an animal by taking it apart, and you want to eat the udder, you want to eat the kichal. So you have a unique basa b'chalav problem because there's mamish milk inside the basa itself. So that's a whole discussion in the Mishnah and the Gemara in Kol HaBasa. How do you get around this problem of Basa B'cholav in the Besar HaKchal? But the Gemara says that's only Midrabban. In the Torah, whatever milk was inside the Kchal, B'Shah Shchita, is considered to be Cholav Shchut or Cholav Mesa, and therefore there's no problem at all. But Midrabban, it is a problem. Midrabban is a very complicated sugya, a complicated simon in Shulchan Aruch, about how in the world to take this Kchal, to be Machsha, this Kchal. There are two different traditions about how to learn the simon of Kchal, the sugya of Kchal. So there are some who do it the old style way, who learn it in Mamish with all the Rashi and the praises and the Rif and the Rambam and every the long, long, long Ramon and Simon Tzadi about all the details of Kalam, and the other Masoreis to skip the whole Simon because it's complicated. So last time I said Shirim and Bas B'chalav, we skipped it this year in Yeshiva, so we did it. So I don't know, we'll see what happens. The only reason, what changed my height, that last year I skipped it and this year we did it, so change was very different with the dinner in Mavanas. They made the whole razzle-dazzle dinner in Mavanas a couple of months ago. One of the things, anyone was there? Anyone made it there? So one of the things that they served was a kchal. So I figured they must have spent so much time explaining what the dinim of kchal there. So at least the bachurim were getting smicha and yeshiva. They should know what to do. Next time they have one of these fancy dinners, that's why I decided this year to do it. So when we get to Simon Tzadi, we'll decide whether we're going to spend the time on it or not. Anyway, but it's only a problem with the rabbanim. The whole sugya of kchal is only with the rabbanim. So come to Bikiveger and has a fascinating shaila concerning this din of Cholav Shchut and Cholav Mesa that's not really considered to be Basa B'Cholav on the level of Deraisa. It's not the most common shaila, but it's conceptually a fascinating shaila. Bikiveger wants to know the following din. You know there's a famous halach in the fourth parak of Masechet Chulin called the Ben Pakua, that if you shecht an animal and the animal happens to be pregnant, and you open it up, and if the animal is pregnant, early stage of pregnancy, you open it up and not alive, the animal, the fetus doesn't walk out alive, then everybody agrees that's okay. That's called babahema osatacheli. Shecht an animal, whatever's inside is mutter. But the tanoim at a machlokes, what's the din if you shecht an animal at the very end of the pregnancy, you shecht it and then you open it up and then the calf walks right out. So that's what's called the ben pakua. So we happen to fast in halacha that a ben pakua doesn't require shechita min haTorah, and even midrabanan doesn't really need shechita. It just needs shechita midrabanan mishumar zayin, because it doesn't looks very funny that min haTorah you're allowed a mamshid alive because it's considered to be shechted already. It's considered to be meis already. That's the famous discussion of the Achron, and that was the time with Yosef, that Yosef accused his brothers of eating Eva Menachai, because he didn't realize they were really eating Ben Pakua. He didn't learn the Sugin Chulin, Machlekes HaTanoim, Yosef and his brothers, the whole fancy discussion. But Lamai says, the din of Ben Pakua, we paskin that Ben Pakua is Me'ikam Mikra Din Mutter. So Kivegar has the following shalom. What would the din be if this Ben Pakua, this baby that came out of the mother after Shechita, now it's grown up a little bit, and it's a couple of years later, and it's this baby now starts to produce its milk. So is that milk considered to be milchiks min haTorah, or is that considered to be like cholav shchuta? So it's a very strange shaila. So what should the shaila depend on? So the Kivega presents as following. That this gzeres hakosov, that cholav shchuta is only midrabban. Cholav shchuta, cholav mesa is not really considered to be milk. Why is that? So what was the source? How did Chazal know that Cholav Shchuta is not considered to be included in Basa B'Cholav? So the Gemara says that the Pasuk says, B'Cholav Imo, Prat L'Shchuta She'enu Ru'ya Lios Eim. That after an animal is dead, so we can't have children anymore. So usually that's an equation. After something is dead, it can't have a baby anymore. So comes up Kivegim and says, here you have a strange situation. Api Alocha, this animal is dead because it was already shechted. Harai, you're allowed to, let me take a bite out of it, midarai. You don't have to shecht it at all. It's not even midachai. It's mamish dead. On the other hand, this cow may have many, many children. So you have a strange phenomenon. You have a shchuta, which can be molid. So what's the din? That which the Gemara learns out from a pasuk, that cholav shchuta is excluded from basa b'cholav because of... Cholav shchuta is excluded from basa b'cholav because it's not royal yos aim, So if you lu yitzu, you would create a situation, a crazy one in a million case where a shchuta can have a baby, so maybe that would be considered to be bosa b'chol of deraisa. Riki Vega is not sure. Not sure what the halacha is. Again, not the most relevant shayla. There is another shayla that Riki Vega doesn't touch on, but others touch on, and that's the only reason why I would say this. This doesn't appear in Yeridea. You'll never find this in Yeridea, but it's a Malbim in the beginning of Parshas Vayera of all places, so it's a little bit in Yom HaYoma. So the Malbim discusses the following shayla. What's the din if you have either bosa or chol of from Sefer Yetzirah? Person makes make a cow. Assuming you can do that. So you make a cow based on Sefer Yetzirah. Is that cow considered to be flesh? Because if the milk that comes out of the cow, is that considered to be milchik? So the Malbim suggests, I know, he thinks that the Torah was given for normal scientific, you know, for a cow that was born from a cow, from Shesh and Mebrashis. If you make a goyla, I don't want to use the phrase you clone a cow, I don't want to get involved in anything. You make something, mamash yesh meyayin, so that's not considered a pialach, to be boss, that's not considered to be cholov. So says the Malbim, he thinks that's the emes of pshat in the psukim, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, when the Tosik says that Vayas ben Bakar, that it says that Avraham Avinu made a cow. So that answers the famous question, how is he serving flesh to milchiks instead of malachim? So the answer was it wasn't flesh, it wasn't milchiks, because it's Vayas, because he made it using Sefer Yetzirah. Don't quote me on that, whether that's Pshat or Tzokim, I'm not sure. Just take a look at the Malbim, you know, in Parshas Vayera. But I call upon him, what you see from everything that we're saying is that the Cholav, that phrase in the Chumash, so Cholav doesn't only mean that it's quote unquote biologically Cholav. There are certain halachas that have to take place in order for it to really be labeled up Yidin Cholav. The Xeris of Mei Cholav, and the Xeris of Cholav Zachon, the Xeris of Cholav Shchuta. So the word Cholav is also a tricky thing. So we combine what we spoke about last week about the word Basar is tricky and the word Cholav is tricky. So only when you have a combination of halachic Basar with halachic Cholav, then and only then do you have a problem with Basar and Cholav.
Anybody not find this yet?
Type of situation besides actual pikuach nefesh, any tremendous shasach gadol. I mean, the shasach gadol, the person we're talking about, the original shayla was the Pesach issues, other types of very, very serious issues. Are there any grounds whatsoever to permit abortion? So basically, at the end of the discussion of the poskim, it really boils down to this machlekes. According to the Rambam, the answer is no. According to the Rambam, it's ritzicha. According to the Rambam, you can't even get to discuss the shayla. It's outright ritzicha. So it's also. Because according to Rashi, that abortion is not reticha, it's some kind of another iser, then you have to look very carefully, what is that other iser, and are there any other grounds to permit whatever that quote-unquote other iser is going to be. So this basic, really, in a sense, introduction shia to the life cycle is a very basic halachic question. At what point does life begin? And the whole sugya, the whole play out of the sugyas in Yuma and Erechin, well, in terms of Pekuach Nefesh, will depend on that child. And then the second half, in terms of the Sugyan Sanhedrin, the Mishnah and all those, Rashi and the Rambam will also depend on that basic fundamental question, is what point is considered to be the beginning of life.
I'm sorry.
At the last minute, I have just a one. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay,
you lost somebody to... I'm sorry. I just told them last night I'm going to be with it. They wanted, I was supposed to go next week and they changed it.
That's what they said.
Okay. So many talented people in there.
I'm sorry.
Hopefully another time. Okay? Okay.
Officially welcome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, from one leaving to another leaving.